The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight with Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Okay, well, we have a day of breaking news. Welcome to a Friday. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com and on tape delay on the Progressive Voices Network and a bunch of other progressive online radio stations. And wherever you listen, I thank you for listening. I've been lately trying to open the show with something funny, something humorous to take the edge off a little bit, at least get us started off laughing and let it deteriorate after that. But I just witnessed something that was laughable, although I wouldn't call it humorous. It was funny in a really sad sort of way. It was Donald Trump in the Rose Garden with a teleprompter killing the nation. Hey, let's play Clue 2019 style. No, Donald Trump appeared in the Rose Garden to announce a, quote, deal, that they've come to a deal and he's going to reopen the government and get those furloughed workers their back pay. Except it wasn't a deal. It was a cave. Yes, Donald Trump caved. He caved. He blinked. He lost. If it weren't for the fact that I'd get the video taken down by YouTube, I would have started the show today with Beck's Loser. You know, I'm a loser, baby, so why don't you kill me? Obviously sung from Trump's perspective. What he announced was basically the continuing resolution that had passed unanimously at the end of the 115th Congress, passed the Senate unanimously, the same bill that Mitch McConnell wouldn't bring up for a vote. That, well, he finally did yesterday in the chicken shit Republican caucus, who's what, afraid Donald Trump's little hands are going to come strangle them or something. All but six voted against the way they voted just a mere 5 weeks ago. What did Donald Trump get? Well, he offered nothing. He offered to give the Democrats exactly what they demanded, a 3-week continuing resolution during which they can negotiate and try to figure out border security. Not a wall, mind you. In fact, Donald Trump said over and 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 over again that without his funding for his bullshit wall, government would remain closed. Because that's how Donald Trump thinks. Hurting the American people, hurting the nation he professes to love, hurting everything about this country, that's how he goes about getting what he wants. It would have been more productive if he just would have done what he was figuratively doing and held his breath until his face turned blue. And maybe we could have all gotten lucky and he would have fucking died. Because that would be better. I know, then we'd have Mike Pence. But you know what? Mike Pence is chicken shit. Mike Pence is an idiot who doesn't have the charisma that I don't see, but apparently enough million lemmings in this country do to have supported him to get to this place. I have the whole thing recorded, but I don't want to stress your ears. I don't want to do it. So Donald Trump, but let me, I promise I won't abuse you. Let me play the beginning and you can hear how quickly he got it wrong.
Thank you very much, my fellow Americans. I am very proud to announce today
that we have reached a deal.
Right there. It took, what, 3 seconds? There was no deal. Nothing was negotiated. Donald Trump just caved. He gave in to what Nancy Pelosi was demanding all along, a clean, continuing resolution, no money for a border wall, just reopen government, get things running again, get the workers paid so that they can begin negotiations. That's where a deal is made. I can't believe I have to say this to the supposed alleged co-author of The Art of the Deal. Deals are made when at least two parties come together and negotiate and go back and forth. You didn't negotiate. You made threats. And your threats didn't pay off. So there you were, looking as impotent as you are, trying to twist reality to fit into your demented little brain, and say it was a deal. It wasn't a deal. You caved. You gave in because, oh, maybe it's because your approval ratings have fallen so much. Gee, the announcement that Dump was going to speak in the Rose Garden came shortly after. There was a new poll. Let's see if I can find it here. From ABC. I took some virtual notes here. New ABC News Washington Post poll has Trump at 37% approval rating. Hey, that's winning. I can't stand the winning. He's got the lowest 2-year average approval rating on record for any president in any polls dating back 72 years. Hey, Donald, that's the way you like it, isn't it? Yeah. Congratulations, big guy. Must be so proud. I recorded this thing. I won't play it for you. But one thing, apparently, I love reading the tweets from the journalists who are on site when stuff like this is going on. And one of them had made the observation that the teleprompter at one point just stopped and sort of in parentheses said, talk about human trafficking. So Donald Trump went off again on his four women and duct tape in the backs of cars or trucks in desert areas. Daniel Dale of the Toronto Star, who's been on this program, tweeted along with this story that human trafficking experts tell me they've never heard of this happening. Just isn't how it usually works. Once again, Donald Trump was making shit up. I had to ask continuously why, after the first 2 minutes in which he said, we're going to reopen the government and, people get paid. Although you got to know that contract workers don't get paid. Millions of people have still been fucked over by this president for this shutdown for no reason at all. It did nothing. Here's another tweet from Bess Kalb. Today, the president of the most powerful country on earth, not anymore, but anyway, I digress, stood in front of his people and told us they make a left or a right because there are four women in a van because of the internet. Yeah, that's it. Here, the prompter said, talk about human trafficking and then stopped. Trump ad-libbed the entire thing. It's unbelievable. And then at the end of it all, he went on after he said, I give. I forget what the kid term is. You cry something when you give up. I'm dating myself. Anyway, here's another observation from Daniel Dale. He writes at the end of the speech, Trump walked out after making this threat. Oh, the threat. He made the threat. Quote, really have no choice but to build a powerful wall or steel barrier. If we don't get a fair deal from Congress, the government will either shut down on February 15th again, or I will use the powers afforded to me under the laws and the Constitution to address this emergency. Yeah, he actually did that. And then Daniel Dale of that wrote, Trump walked out after making this threat, didn't take questions. Perhaps notably, and perhaps not, he didn't quite make the threat contingent on getting wall funding, just said walls are important and that he needs a fair deal. Now, if you're wondering what Dump's bosses, Ann Coulter and Roger Limbaugh's think, Here's two tweets from Ann Coulter. Sure feel safer today with the feds taking Roger Stone off the streets. No need for a border wall now. Nothing to fear from MS-13. Hashtag our tax dollars at work. Yeah, I agree. And then she tweeted, ooh, good news for George Herbert Walker Bush. As of today, he is no longer the biggest wimp ever to serve as president of the United States. I guess Ann Coulter didn't approve. As for limp balls, I don't think he has weighed in yet. But I got to say, as disgusted as I am at Trump, and I am, in case you couldn't tell, a little Chucky Schmucky was at it, too. So just a few minutes after Trump's dog and pony show in the Rose Garden, Schumer took to the floor of the Senate. I always wanted to talk back to him just as he was speaking.
The president has agreed to our request to open the government and then debate border security.
He didn't agree to anything.
Great news for 800,000 federal workers.
Yeah, what about the contractors?
Millions of Americans who depend on government services.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank President Trump.
Why? Wait a minute. You want to thank President Trump? For what? This is what's wrong with Chuck Schumer. He wants to thank President Trump and Mitch McConnell for 5 weeks of this bullshit. Nothing was accomplished by this shutdown. Nothing. Nothing changed from 5 weeks ago to today. Except Trump got cut down to size. Little Chucky Schmucky, stop apologizing, you fucking wimp.
We have agreed to pass a clean 3-week continuing resolution
that you could have done 5 weeks ago.
To reopen the government. Also,
yeah,
we will pass legislation in the Senate related to the Department of Homeland Security so the House and Senate can participate in a conference committee on that legislation.
Which would have happened anyway.
Conference, Democrats and Republicans.
That's how it works, Chuck.
Have the opportunity to negotiate the details of the Homeland Security bill.
You think?
Which includes issues of border security, humanitarian aid, drug inspection technology, and many others. We expect the continuing resolution to clear the House and be signed by the President today.
Did you say anything, Schumer?
As soon as the President signs the legislation to open government, we in Congress will roll up our sleeves. I genuinely
about
hope
fucking time
that this process can produce something that is good for the country and acceptable to both sides.
Well, that would be a change.
We don't agree on some of the specifics of border security. Democrats are against the wall. But we agree on many things, such as the need for new technology and the need
all
to
right.
strengthen
I'm
security.
Sorry. Enough of this shit. He said nothing, but he thanked Trump and McConnell, and that's all you need to know. All right. There was other news today. This is all developing and enveloping, and we'll get to it. Just a heads up that our guest today is a really fascinating one. He's running for president. It is our first declared presidential candidate. Might be our last. You never know. His name is Andrew Yang. I hadn't heard of him until a listener made me aware of him, and everything he stands for, I support. Maybe I'm old school, though. I don't think he could possibly win, but he should try because he's got great ideas, and we're going to hear from him in just a little while. But first, let's get to the rest of the news.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
What a way to kick off a weekend, huh? It's Mueller time! But before we get into that, we've got to talk about what we just talked about. More breaking news. Trump took to the Rose Garden this afternoon to cave into Democrats' demands and announced he reached a tentative deal to temporarily reopen government for 3 weeks without one red cent of the $5.7 billion in ransom he's been demanding from the country. Negotiations would ostensibly happen during those 3 weeks, but this is Trump we're talking about, so who knows? Now on to Mueller time. Ah, it started like this.
This is CNN Breaking News.
Ooh.
And the breaking news this morning, the FBI has arrested Roger Stone, the president's
Yeehaw.
Political advisor. Exclusive footage you're looking at right now from CNN as the FBI arrives at Roger Stone's residence in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, taking him into custody. We understand he will be arraigned in Fort Lauderdale later this morning, indicted on 7 counts. 1 count of obstruction, 5 counts of making false statements, 1 count of witness tampering. Again, they arrived before dawn there, just after 6 a.m. A dozen officers were told. The FBI agent shouted, FBI warrant.
You know, what they call FBI warrant. It is remarkable to watch this all unfold.
You can see Roger Stone right there, a little bit behind that door. And yes, you know, standard operating procedure for the FBI to show up heavily armed
in riot gear
like this. But they didn't do this for other people connected in the investigation. So it is remarkable that they did this without warning, without any indication to Stone's lawyers beforehand that this would happen. We don't know also if they executed a search warrant on the house.
I mean, as Ann just told us, the reason they do that is because they fear that the person's going to be a flight risk, so they want to do it under the cover of darkness with a surprise, or they think that there's so much evidence inside the room, inside the house, that they don't want to give anybody a lead time, a heads up, to try to hide some of that evidence. So that's what we just watched this morning.
I guess that makes sense. Now, Robert Hill in the NicoleSandler.com chat room asked a question that I wondered myself and saw asked online today. And actually, I did find the answer. The question is, what Robert Hill writes, I'm curious, was CNN invited to be there by the FBI or were they camped out waiting for something to happen? And according to someone at CNN, and I can't remember who tweeted it, it was actually good old-fashioned journalism. They were camped out at the grand jury yesterday where there was action, and usually the Mueller grand jury meets on Fridays. When it meets on Thursdays, there's a good indication that an indictment is coming down. And since Roger Stone has been the focus of so much speculation that he would be indicted, they camped out at his house, and it paid off. So anyway, that's the official explanation of how CNN got that footage. So as to who's next, don't know. Don Jr. certainly has a ring to it. We'll have to stay tuned. Anyway, Roger Stone faces charges that he lied. Is the sky blue? That's a silly question because Republicans are constantly trying to tell us that the sky's green. Anyway, Stone faces charges that he lied, tried to tamper with a witness to hide his efforts to learn about the releases of Democrats' hacked emails during the 2016 campaign. After his early morning arrest, Stone appeared briefly in federal court here in Fort Lauderdale. The judge ordered him released on a $250,000 bond. Now, of course, after a few hours, Stone emerged from the courthouse, obviously loving the attention of the crowds and the media gathered. And as he stepped up to the microphones that just happened to be waiting for him, you can tell he was a little disconcerted by the way the crowd reacted to him. There were lots of boos and chants of lock him up that almost drowned out the noise emanating from his mouth.
Thank you. As I have always said, the only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
Yeah, what he said there was the only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about. That's Roger Stone in a nutshell for you. My only sorrow about the whole thing is that he was allowed to leave on a signature bond, which is bullshit. I just can't wait till he meets his cellmates. That's all. In other news, drama unfolded in the Senate yesterday when dueling proposals to reopen parts of the government failed to advance. It's what led to today's festivities, I suppose. The first bill was essentially the doomed plan announced by Trump during his Oval Office speech last week that did include the funding he wanted for his stupid wall. That went down by a vote of 50 to 47. 60 votes were needed to advance the bill. The Democratic bill, yes, the one that passed unanimously through the Senate just a mere month or so ago, that it was a continuing resolution that would have reopened the government until February 8th and, more importantly, pay the federal workers who today missed their second paycheck. That also failed, but it did garner two more votes than Trump's plan did. That vote was 52 to 44. Of course, that's what Donald Trump said that they was the deal they agreed upon. Again, it wasn't a deal. It was a royal cave. Donald Trump lost. He was there with his dick in his hand trying to look presidential in the Donald Trump mold of presidential. Anyway, when I say drama unfolded in the Senate yesterday, I wasn't necessarily talking about the votes. Instead, I salute Senator Michael Bennett of Colorado, a guy I couldn't have picked out of a lineup before yesterday, but he took to the floor, the Senate floor yesterday, to deliver an impassioned speech slamming Senator Ted Cruz, who, I don't know, got up there with his ridiculous looking beard and I don't even know what he was saying. I guess he was, you know, applauding this bullshit of a shutdown. And, well, here's what Michael Bennett had to say about Ted Cruz.
These crocodile tears that the senator from Texas is crying for first responders are too hard for me to take. They're too hard for me to take. Because when the senator from Texas shut this government down in 2013, my state was flooded. It was underwater.
Yep.
People were killed.
I remember that.
Which goes to my final point. How ludicrous it is that this government is shut down over a promise the President of the United States couldn't keep. And that America is not interested in having him keep. This idea that he was going to build a medieval wall across the southern border of Texas.
Laughable.
Take it from the farmers and ranchers that were there and have the Mexicans pay for it. Is it true? That's why we're here.
That's Michael Bennett of Colorado. Now, I applaud him. Go for it. Good for you. Speak out. But to the idiots online who are saying, Michael Bennett for president, stop it. Learn about the candidates. Find out who's running. Learn where they stand on the issues. Stop bad-mouthing the other ones. And listen to them and pick who you like and vote in the primary. And then whoever wins the primary, you vote for to get rid of that miscreant asshole Donald Trump that's sitting in the White House. How hard is that? Yes, Colorado was flooded. This was, I want to say 5 years ago, massive floods, Boulder. It was a mess. Go back and read up on it. That was during the Ted Cruz shutdown. Well, as the Trump shutdown hits its fifth week today, federal employees are working. They're not working. They're hurting. Sorry. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross tried to downplay the misery they're feeling, showing his complete lack of understanding of how life works in America.
Put it in perspective, you're talking about 800,000 workers. And while I feel sorry for the individuals that have hardship cases, 800,000 workers, if they never got their pay, which is not the case, they will eventually get it. But if they never got it, you're talking about 0.3% on our GDP.
You unfeeling piece of shit.
A gigantic number overall.
Mr. Secretary, there are reports that there are some federal workers who are going to homeless shelters to get food.
Well, I know they are, and I don't really quite understand why, because as I mentioned before, the obligations that they would undertake, say a borrowing from a bank or
go into debt because our president's
guaranteed.
An asshole.
So the 30 days of pay that some people will be out, there's no real reason why they shouldn't be able to get a loan.
No real reason why they shouldn't go into debt. Because our government is run by assholes who don't give a shit about the people who are hurting.
Trump was asked about Ross's comments, showing that he's as clueless as the rest of his cabinet.
Mr. President, you see Wilbur Ross said that he doesn't understand why federal workers would need help getting food. Can you understand?
No, I haven't heard the statement, but I do understand that perhaps he should have said it differently. Local people know who they are when they go for groceries and everything else. And I think what Wilbur is probably trying to say is that they will work along. I know
Bullshit.
Banks are working along.
Bullshit.
If you have mortgages, the mortgagees, the mortgage, the folks collecting the interest and all of those things they work along.
Bullshit.
Right. That's what happens in time like this.
No.
They know the people. They've been dealing with them for years.
God.
And they work along. The grocery store. And I think that's probably what Wilbur Ross meant. But I have.
Oh, my God. So we knew he was tone deaf. But really, we now know that Donald Trump has never paid a mortgage, never gone to a grocery store, has no conception of what a great job is, because he ended that by saying, Wilbur Ross is doing a great job. Local people, they'll work with you. Go into your bank. Tell them you've been impacted by the government shutdown and you just don't have your mortgage payment this month. See what they say. They'll work with you.
Bullshit.
There are no words. There are no words. Larry Kudlow, who's Trump's national economic advisor, actually said that his staff had volunteered to keep working during the shutdown. A reporter called him out on it.
How are they volunteering? How are workers usually recalled without pay volunteering?
They're coming out. Workers, they're showing up.
That's not volunteering if you're forced to work without pay and you don't show up, you lose your job. So that's not volunteering. That's not what volunteering means.
You know what? I'm not even going to go there. You know what I'm saying.
You know what? That's his response. I'm not even going to go there. You know what I'm saying. Yeah, we know what you're saying, you piece of shit. You're forcing your staff to work and they're not getting paid. That's called slavery. And the FAA this morning took the unprecedented step of halting all flights into New York's LaGuardia Airport, and Newark Airport was shut down as well amid a shortage of air traffic control staff. A statement from the National Air Traffic Controllers Association reads, we have warned about what could happen as a result of the prolonged shutdown. Many controllers have reached the breaking point of exhaustion, stress, and worry caused by this shutdown. Each hour that goes by makes the situation worse. And just because you know you want it, you need it. Oh, yes, we have some more Florida news. We knew that Florida's new governor was racist. We don't call him Ron DeRacist for nothing. But we didn't realize that being racist was a qualification for his cabinet. But just mere weeks into his new gig as Secretary of State, an idiot named Michael Ertl resigned. Yeah, he was Florida's Secretary of State, apparently. He resigned after the emergence of photos of him from 2005. Halloween 2005, just after Hurricane Katrina. There was Michael Ertl in blackface mocking victims of Hurricane Katrina. When confronted with the photographic proof, Ertl responded, quote, there's nothing I can say. And he submitted his resignation. Again, oy, Florida. And finally, one other thing, you know, two other things. It's been an ugly week in the journalism business. About 1,000 jobs were cut from Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, and Gannett, which is the nation's largest newspaper chain. The death march is apparent on Twitter, where career journalists are announcing they've been let go. I don't know what I can do to help. I'm certainly not in a position to offer anyone a job. I'm just making sure you know about it, because this is, I think, a direct result of Donald Trump's insistence on journalism being fake news. Fake news is, you know, Weekend Update on Saturday Night Live and The Daily Show. He's a fake president. And finally, if not for this morning's arrest of Roger Stone, our lead story would still be a monster. A Trump administration official overruled multiple intelligence experts who had denied top secret security clearance for Jared Kushner. Trump's son-in-law's clearance was denied twice by two White House security experts because of FBI concerns about foreign influence on Kushner. There's a lot more you'll be hearing about this. And again, this would have been the lead story if it weren't for the shit show happening at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. All right, in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to bring on our guest again. I had not heard of Andrew Yang before last week when one of my listeners suggested I should check him out because he's a great candidate. He'd make a great president. And I said, nobody's ever heard of him. Who is he? Well, he's an entrepreneur who, you know, made it big and then used his money for really good things, for philanthropic purposes, to help people in need. And I thought, okay, well, that's, you know, magnanimous. And all of a sudden, Andrew Yang jumped into our Twitter conversation. And I said, well, come on my show and convince me. And he said, okay. So, you know what? We're going to wait 3 minutes to get, I know he's waiting for us now, but I want to play for you his introductory video so at least you can get an idea of who Andrew Yang is. So take it away, video.
Over the last number of years, we have automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Missouri, and Iowa, all states that were swing states and competitive, and all states that went to Donald Trump. So that's the state we're in right now, and unfortunately, I'm here to say things are going to get much, much worse. What we did to the manufacturing workers, we're about to do to retail workers, call center workers, fast food workers, truck drivers, and on through the economy.
The only thing I worry about is that some total unknown that nobody ever heard of comes along.
Then there's Andrew Yang.
Andrew Yang, entrepreneur and author of The War on Normal People.
Andrew, you're running for president.
Yes, I am.
So we're in the third or fourth inning of the greatest technological and economic shift in human history.
He's looking at what's happening in tech and automation and AI, and he says, this is going to be catastrophic if we don't figure out how to deal with it, and he thinks UBI is a solution.
Every American gets $1,000 a month.
I've never seen shareholders get upset when a company declares a dividend. This is a dividend for the American people. We are the richest, most advanced society in the history of mankind.
He's really been campaigning on a platform of ideas, and it's been fascinating to watch how that has taken off, and I think that kind of candidate really could make headway.
I'm Andrew Yang. I'm a serial entrepreneur. I'm not a politician. I'm a problem solver. Some people call me a futurist, and I say I'm a presentist. It's just that the other politicians are stuck in the past. Right now, 57% of Americans can't afford an unexpected $500 bill. What happens when you put $1,000 a month into their hands? Where does that money go? They're going to spend it, right? In their local community. Instead of GDP, we should be measuring childhood education rates, average income, mental health and freedom from substance abuse, environmental sustainability, the proportion of our elderly who can retire in quality circumstances. If we change the measurements, we can change everything. We spend twice as much as other industrialized countries on our healthcare than other countries because our system rewards activity and not healthfulness. And as president, I will move us towards Medicare for all and get the incentives right. Washington, D.C. is not a town of leaders, it's a town of followers. We need to create a wave in the rest of the country and bring that wave crashing down on their heads. And I'm here tonight to ask you, will you create that wave with me? Yes. Together, we can build a new economy that prioritizes human beings, and we can take this disaster of a presidency and swing it the other direction. We have to have our own vision and have the courage to say, if we invest in ourselves, then we will all win.
Please welcome
to the stage
the next president.
The next president.
The next president.
Of the United States.
Of the United States.
Andrew Yang.
Oops. Ah! All right. So there's a bit about Andrew Yang. Let's call him and get him on the line. Oops. We're calling Andrew Yang. His website is yang2020.com. You can find Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Yang VFA. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Nicole.
Hello. First of all, thank you so much for agreeing to join me today. I really appreciate it. You're our first official declared candidate for president in 2020 to join us. So I am honored that you're here. I just played your little introductory video for our audience so they would have at least an idea of who you are, because I guess to start, we've got to admit that not a whole lot of people know the name Andrew Yang.
No, not at all. And that's one reason I'm grateful to you for having me on, because I need to introduce myself to more Americans as fast as I can. We don't have that much time to get this guy out of the Oval Office.
No, we don't. Oh, my God. So I got to start by saying, and we met sort of, I explained to the listeners on Twitter, where I was told about you by a listener. And, you know, I did a little research and I said, well, his ideas sound great, but no, he can't win. And then, you know, I invited you on to try to convince me. So I guess your background as an entrepreneur afforded you some success, and you use that then for the greater good. Tell us a bit about how you earned your fortune and then what you've done with it, what VFA is.
Sure. So I was the CEO of an education company that grew to become number one in the United States and was acquired by a public company, the Washington Post, in 2009. Mm-hmm. And everyone listening to this remembers 2009. The country was still going through the depths of the financial crisis. And it made me sad and dispirited, just like it made everyone else sad. And I thought, well, how did this happen? And what I thought was the cause at the time was we had so much energy and talent heading to Wall Street and Silicon Valley and not to Detroit or New Orleans or Birmingham or St. Louis or Cleveland to help build the next generation of American company. And so I quit my job. I donated $120,000 to a seed nonprofit called Venture for America that recruits and trains aspiring entrepreneurs to work at businesses and then start businesses in Detroit, Cleveland, Baltimore, St. Louis. So the organization grew and grew to a point where it helped create several thousand jobs. I was honored by the Obama White House. I'm happy to say even now that I'm running for president, the organization continues to thrive without me. The new CEO is a woman named Amy Nelson, who is my number two, and it gave me a lot of joy to be able to leave the organization in such capable hands. So that's what I've been doing for the last 7 years, helping create jobs in the Midwest and the South. And I realized during my time in these regions that the reason why Donald Trump is our president today is that we automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Missouri, Wisconsin, even as I was working to create tens, hundreds of jobs in these regions, I saw that the automation of these manufacturing jobs has been devastating to many, many American communities.
And they have, and I agree. But do you think that there's any way back? I mean, you look at Trump, who's promising to, you know, repopulate the coal mines. We all know that that's not realistic. That's not the way of the future. That what should be done with the coal miners is to retrain them. Maybe, retrain them in infrastructure or something else where their talents can be utilized. But we know that there's not going to be a return to coal mining despite all of Trump's bluster. Do you think manufacturing by humans is coming back?
No, I don't. But I want to point out something really difficult for progressives and Democrats to acknowledge.
Okay.
Is that we blasted away 4 million jobs in these regions. And I've been in these towns and communities, and they are hurting. Mm-hmm. Like, hurting to a point where now suicides and drug overdoses have spiked to unprecedented levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so Donald Trump shows up and says, we're going to turn back time, we're going to bring your jobs back, we're going to build a wall. All the stuff that is nonsense, frankly.
Yes.
And even on some level, many of the people who voted for him know that none of those things are happening. But the Democratic response was essentially to ignore the central problem, was to pretend that that getting rid of 4 million manufacturing jobs actually shouldn't hurt anyone, and that these people can just transition to new jobs. When the reality is, and even when you are struggling with what you would do with tens of thousands of former coal miners,
mm-hmm.
retraining is an effective solution for approximately 5 to 15% of displaced workers, according to the stats. And that's from government-funded retraining programs, when people are lucky enough to even have those programs to access.
Agreed.
So we're talking about 80 to 85% of workers who lose their jobs in these contexts will not be retrained for a new job. And that is why Donald Trump's our president today. We have to start owning the truth of the problems that got him elected.
Okay, so what is the answer? What do we do about all these lost manufacturing jobs? And by the way, I just got to say, I had interviewed Bernie Sanders for years, long before he ever, you know, jumped into the presidential fray. And, one of the topics he was always talking about was the travesty of all the lost manufacturing jobs in our country. So it's not all Democrats who just said, it's the sign of the times.
Yeah, but it's true. Bernie's on top of it. You're 100%
yes,
right.
Okay, cool.
So the big issue, though, to me is that the conventional progressive prescription has been what you just described, which is education and retraining.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds very, very reasonable. But when you start looking at the actual reality on the ground, you see that, for example, the average truck driver is a 49-year-old male with a high school education and health problems, because sitting in a truck is very bad for your health.
Sure.
And so even if you were to give that person, like, you know, some government funded certificate in some business skills, most companies would much rather hire someone younger, cheaper.
And, tell me about it.
You know,
I know that
less experience, and then the former truck driver might not want that job anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there's like a massive misalignment with the needs of the labor market and the needs of some of these displaced workers. So the reason why we're all struggling with this set of problems, Nicole, is that the solutions are much, much bigger than most of us are comfortable talking about. And so to me, and you've seen this with my platform, I'm suggesting that we replace this current atmosphere of scarcity that Americans are laboring under, essentially a subsistence labor arrangement that most of us have, and move towards a broader definition of citizenship and work and value, and start declaring a dividend for all American adults of $1,000 a month, $12,000 a year.
Universal basic income.
Universal basic income.
And we've talked about that on this program before, and I'm a proponent of it. I think it's a great idea. But you also know that $1,000 a month isn't going to do much to replace an income.
Yeah, it's not. And one of the misconceptions about it is that it's somehow a work replacement. Mm-hmm. In most instances, it's not a work replacement. But what it does do is it helps shield us from existential crises that happen. And we can see it when these federal workers, thank goodness the government looks like it's reopening.
Yeah, great deal.
When these federal workers miss one paycheck, then they fall off an edge.
Yeah.
And when workers lose their jobs, like they plummet into financial ruin. And so with $1,000 a month, it's not a silver bullet, but it does end up easing many of these transitions. Because if you look at the numbers, right now Americans are moving across state lines, starting businesses, getting married and having children, all at record lows.
Hmm.
And $1,000 a month could help make our families and communities much, much stronger and healthier. It also helps to reward and compensate women for the work that's being done in communities around the country that is right now being unrewarded and unrecognized, which unfortunately women do the vast majority of.
Yeah, I hear you. And so universal basic income would be a sort of a buffer, basically, against disaster, which so many Americans are experiencing now after missing just two paychecks. It still doesn't answer the question of how we get these people back to work. But this is just one of many issues. And in fact, if people visit yang2020.com, there's a page on Andrew's policies. And you've got the three big ones: universal basic income, Medicare for all, and human-centered capitalism, which is fascinating. But then you've got you have on the issues, and the page you keep scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling. And I got to tell you, this is refreshing, because so many candidates, whether it's for, you know, your local congressional seat or for president, they don't put out all their positions, because I think they get away with more by being a bit cagey. You're putting it all out there. You're in fact, you have a quote on the website from the Democratic Party leadership in Iowa. It says, "Mr. Yang is the most detailed and comprehensive set of policy proposals we have ever seen at this stage in the campaign." So you've obviously been working on this for a while. How long have you been a declared candidate?
Well, I declared in the New York Times in February of last year, so it's been about 11 months.
So you were the first in, weren't you?
I think John Delaney preceded me, though people tend to forget about John. But I'm heading to Iowa for the eighth time next week, and I've now just started to poll there, where I was tied with Kirsten Gillibrand in the last poll. So when you ask, how can we make this vision a reality, how can I win, it really centers upon, as you know, the voters in Iowa and New Hampshire, and whether they will embrace a new economic vision that helps put people first.
Which I got to say,
Iowa
and New Hampshire, I mean, just that alone, our whole electoral process, is it right to put the fate of the nation in the hands of Iowa and New Hampshire?
Well, you know, I'm an operator, and so you don't You know, you don't wish for the lay of the land.
Right. I got you. You deal with what you got.
Yep. So as you know, our current system advantages those two states a great deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, we don't have a whole lot of time, but you're doing the work that needs to be done. I notice that your name is included on some, you know, of the graphics put up by the TV stations or the articles written about the candidates who are in the race. Sometimes you're there and sometimes you're not. How much of a challenge is it getting your not only your ideas out there, but being taken seriously as a candidate?
Well, you know, it's one reason, again, I'm grateful to have a conversation with you in this context, because, you know, in your case, a listener told you about me, and you may or may not have heard of me at that point. But when people talk to me or meet me, I found that they find that I have a very clear vision for where we have to go. And I'm speaking very honestly about the problems that have gotten us to this point, because technology is advancing in a way that's displacing more and more American workers. 30% of American malls are going to close in the next 4 years because Amazon is just sucking up so much business. And working in retail is still the most common job in our communities around the country. The average retail worker is a 39-year-old woman with a high school degree making between $11 and $12 an hour. So we have to start owning the magnitude of these changes. We are in the third inning of the greatest economic and technological transformation in the history of the world. And Donald Trump is a symptom. He's the manifestation of the fact that we're in the third inning. And we need to get our heads up and wake Americans up to the fact that we're going to need much bigger, more impactful solutions to get through this time.
Well, most definitely. I'm still stuck on this. And you talk a lot about automation in the video that we played before you came on. You put much of the blame of the mess we find ourselves in now on automation. I'm a victim of it. I'm a radio career person. I started in radio in college back in 1979, so I'm in my 40th year of radio. I've been downsized and replaced by automation. Radio did it years ago with an Orwellian-named program called Prophet, but it was spelled P-R-O-P-H-E-T. But it was designed to make radio stations a profit, whereby one person could sit in a studio in City X and spend all day voice tracking air shifts for radio stations around the country. You hit a button and it goes, eliminating thousands of jobs. So the radio industry, from the time I got into it until today, has shrunk, you know, a hundredfold. I mean, there's what job used to be done by one person. Now you've got that one person doing 10 to 15 jobs, and I'm not exaggerating.
Yes.
And that's playing out across the country. You talk about automation, putting all these people out of jobs, closing factories. Again, what is the new economy that will get us working again?
Yeah, so this is the great thing about the Freedom Dividend, which is how I rebranded Universal Basic Income.
Okay.
So if you imagine a town of 50,000 adults in Missouri or Florida, and let's say the work is starting to dry up, but all of a sudden, Andrew Yang is the president in 2021. We pass the Freedom Dividend, which, by the way, a plan just like this is in effect in Alaska already. So we have 37 years of data showing that it works.
Okay.
And so everyone in this town of 50,000 gets another $1,000 a month. That's $50 million a month, $600 million a year, now in the hands of the people in this town. Now, what are they going to spend the money on? They're going to spend it on exactly what we all spend money on, which is tutoring and services for our kids, food, car repairs, the occasional night out,
housing,
home repairs, health care. And the vast majority of that money is going to go right back into the local economy. And so what's going to happen is that those businesses are going to hire right there locally. They're not going to hire, you know, like fancy engineers. They're just going to hire the people that are there to staff the additional shifts at the garage and the restaurant. And that's how we can create a robust economy here, is just by putting buying power into the hands of ourselves, the owners and citizens of this country. If you were to implement the Freedom Dividend, it would grow our consumer economy by 8% and create 2 million jobs immediately, because that's just what would happen if we were to increase our own buying power in an economy the size of our current economy, which is up to $20 trillion. We can easily afford a dividend for our citizens, And it has the byproduct of creating millions of jobs.
I agree with you on that. I also agree with you on Medicare for All, which is another one of your major platforms. I'll play devil's advocate here. I know how we pay for it. I think we save money by going to Medicare for All because we have the most expensive yes. healthcare system in the yes. world with the worst results.
Yes.
And so we're in agreement there. Let me ask you about a friend of the show, Stephanie Kelton, who's an advocate of modern monetary theory. Are you yes. of that mind? Yes. And what about the Green New Deal? Are you in... Yeah. In that
also aligned in favor. It's clear that we need to move towards renewable sources of energy. I'm aligned with just about every progressive priority. And one of the reasons why people find me interesting is that when I talk to CEOs and business people, they find me very reasonable too. Because if I say to them, look, your businesses do better when consumers have money to spend.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a very interesting messenger for policies that you and Stephanie and your listeners, I think, are aligned with because I see the same things you see, Nicole.
Great. I'm looking at the issues that you write about on the website. The freedom dividend, combat climate change, reduce mass incarceration, the opioid crisis, LGBTQ rights. Then you get to foreign policy first principles. Now, there's not a whole lot in here about foreign policy. And I've got to say, in the universe of all the issues that you're dealing with, I'm guessing that foreign policy might be where you have the least expertise. Nobody's could be as bad as Donald Trump's, but what makes you presidential when it comes to foreign policy?
You know, I think most Americans realize that we've made some tragic mistakes over the last number of years. And what we need most in a commander-in-chief is sound judgment and a sense of restraint. I mean, the fact is that if we are falling apart at home, which we are, we're not going to be able to project our values and achieve our goals internationally, certainly not without very strong relationships and allies. So those would be my first principles as commander-in-chief, are judgment and restraint. And I will present myself as someone who has a problem-solving mindset and orientation, and if the American people see that my judgment can be trusted on domestic issues, I believe they'll see that I'll have the right people in place to deal with foreign policy.
And I believe that you are fully capable of hiring the right people. I just, I think back to the guy there now who's, I'll hire the best people, and we see what we came up with. It's why we need somebody who's educated, who is the real deal. And actually has made a fortune on his own and uses it for good purposes and like that. So,
It's funny you say that, Nicole, is that some Trump voters say they're going to vote for me because they say you are what Trump pretended to
be.
And on the progressive side, my applause line is the opposite of Donald Trump is an Asian man who likes math.
That's a good one. I like that. That would make a good bumper sticker as well. So in terms of the campaign, again, Andrew Yang is with us. You can find him on Twitter. That's how I met him, and he inserted himself into a conversation and agreed to come on the show, and I so appreciate it. At Andrew Yang VFA, and the website, again, yang2020.com, which is filled with statements on different policies, again, which this should be the rule. This should be how every campaign website looks.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And it isn't. So that's why, I mean, you can have hours and hours of reading here to find out where you stand on all these issues. And I think a lot of candidates don't like to put it on in writing because they want to be, malleable. They want you to be able to project what you want onto this candidate, and you're saying, well, here's who I am, here's what I believe, here's what I can do, and that's admirable. Are you ready for the ugliness? I mean, I know you're running as a Democrat, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
And, as I've already mentioned, in the last election, I was a big Bernie Sanders supporter. I did vote for Hillary Clinton when it came down to it because, anyone but Trump. Unfortunately, we know what happened. But my heart is with Bernie's ideas and his policies. As I said, I'd been interviewing him for years before he ever decided to run for president. We need this stuff and we need it out there on the debate stage. So this is what you're doing full time. You are running for president. You're all in.
Yeah, of course. Raised hundreds of thousands of dollars from tens of thousands of donors around the country. Average donation's only $19, so we joke that my fans are even cheaper than Bernie.
Okay.
But you were ahead of the curve. I was also a Bernie supporter and then voted for Hillary Clinton. I agree that we need to solve the problems that Bernie brought to the forefront. I would suggest that there may be some ways to address some of these problems that are a bit more modern and impactful. But I 100% am aligned with the goals that Bernie held. We need to do much, much more to improve the lives of the American people.
Have you heard anything from or had any discussions with the DNC?
Yeah, I'm friendly with several members of the DNC, and I was an appointee under President Obama. I was an ambassador of entrepreneurship. So I'm friendly with many senior Democrats, and, you know, many of them are excited to have me in the race. Some believe I'm going to express ideas that need to be expressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also the first Asian American man to run for president as a Democrat, and there are some people in the DNC that are excited about that.
Great. No, I am too. I'm just wondering, you know, I would think, I would hope, I should say, that after 2016, they're going to be more welcoming with open arms of all comers, of anyone who wants to throw their hat in the ring. I think that's what primaries are for. It's when we hear the ideas, and it's the time when people like you are so important, because we can hear what's possible. The old adage, people fall in love during the primary and they fall in line during the general. I think never has that been more important. And I haven't always ascribed to that, the falling in line thing. I tend to, you know, march to the beat of my own drummer. But the right now, with so much at stake, I think it is very important. So we've got debates coming up and fundraising, and you got a head start on most of them. Have you heard from any of the other candidates?
You know, it's one of the really fun things about this process, Nicole, is that I've now met a number of the other candidates in Iowa and New Hampshire on the trail, because, you know, that's where we all are hanging out.
Sure.
And that's been a real joy for me. And I'm happy to say that most of the other candidates are true patriots and leaders who just want to do right by the country. And I appreciate how ahead of the curve you've been in identifying some of these needs. And seeing that Bernie's voice was one that needed to be front and center. But I've enjoyed getting to know the other candidates. I have a vision that there are going to be a group of us that head to Washington, D.C. to try and solve some of these problems that got Donald Trump elected. And my goal is to be in that group. I'm frankly not that concerned about the seating chart. I just want to solve problems. I'm a parent. I've got two young kids. And I want to leave them a country that we're still proud of.
Oh, yeah! From your words to the universe's ears. Andrew Yang, thank you again for coming on, for letting us get to know you in at least a small way, much ground as we can cover in about 30 minutes. Again, I encourage people to head over to yang2020.com, because there's a plethora of reading materials there, and you might learn something. And if nothing else, maybe it'll spark some questions and we can open the conversation. What I'm most dismayed about is the ugliness I'm already seeing on Twitter, again, as someone who is a Sanders supporter. And I have not made up my mind about this year. Part of me worries that he might be too old, and I'm not an ageist. I deal with issues around my age all the time. But, you know, there's the reality of it. And I want to make sure whoever we elect is going to be able to be there and do the job. But the attacks I've already gotten from the camp of yet another candidate who's been declared, who's saying that Bernie's people are attacking her, it just is too much noise. And we need
That's terrible.
Stop that and work together for the greater good, for the common goal of getting Donald Trump out of office and somebody really great in office.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more on all accounts. I certainly have no intention of saying anything negative about other patriotic candidates who, you know, all just want to get Donald Trump out of office. Yeah, but there are many people I've talked to, and this is not a knock on anyone, but I've been in Iowa, New Hampshire, and I've talked to many people who supported Bernie in the last run. And they are somewhat ambivalent about him running again. Mm-hmm. There are certainly some who are very excited. But there are some who are looking for someone else to pick up the baton, in part because they realize that, you know, Bernie's, I believe, either 76 or 77.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, they're looking for someone to be able to wage this fight for years and years to come, because we know it's going to be a fight for a long time.
Absolutely. Andrew Yang, thank you so much. I hope you'll stay in touch and visit us again as we get further into the process.
Thanks, Nicole.
Take care.
Have a great one.
Bye-bye. You too. And you guys have a great weekend. And, you know, Roger Stone's been arrested. Onward. See you Tuesday. Bye, everyone.